Amen. Happy Monday. Hey, I just want to say it. I know I'm premature, but I think spring is here. I really do. And I'm not wearing socks today. It's a sign. It's a sign. Spring is on its way. Hey, we want to welcome any visitors here. There's a bunch of visitors. Give them a little welcome. There's the dancer visitors back there, and there's some athletes, and we're glad you guys are here. And we just say, choose hope. Choose hope. Come and join us next year. Hey, one quick announcement. Tomorrow night, there is, for a first time ever, a leadership night. If you're interested in being involved in leadership with Campus Ministries next year as a small group leader for men and women's groups, or with wanting to be a part of the worship team or lead an immersion trip, you need to be at this meeting tomorrow night. It's only from 7 to 8. Dimnit Chapel, right here, be here. Okay, enough announcements. Come on, Stoop. Okay, I call him Stoop, but you need to call him Dean Vanderstoop.
It's okay. It really is fine.
Okay.
Stoop would be fine.
Stoop's here. Okay, too much announcement. Scott Vanderstoop is Dean for the Social Sciences. He's a professor within the Psychology Department, and he gets to speak today. Would you welcome Scott Vanderstoop?
Thank you, Paul. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for being here. It's a privilege to speak with you. A special welcome to visitors. It's a privilege to have you on our campus. Thank you for considering making Hope your house for 4 years. Speaking of houses, I've enjoyed listening to parables of Jesus with you this semester. I'd like to share one with you. Matthew 7, starting at verse 24. Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on a rock. The rains came down, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, yet it did not fall, because it had a foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears my words and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came, the streams rose, the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. Again, it's good to have you here. I should say thank you to the band for playing one of my favorite hymns. You were not late. I asked them to start early. Thank you very much. I was asked to talk about my own journey today. I'd like to do this in the context of this parable. I'm the Dean for Social Sciences. If you have no idea what that means, that is perfectly fine. I will not bore you with it today. I've taught psychology before that for many years, mostly developmental psychology. I am a longtime Hope person. Hope College is where I have built my house for all or part of the last 4 decades. Besides 5 years of graduate school and 5 years of teaching at other colleges, Hope has been my house for the last 24 of the last 34 years, first as a student, then a professor, and now an administrator. Even though I've been here a while, of the 5 people in my immediate family, I am probably the least well-known. Our oldest graduated in 2015. She's shown up here on top on probably the happiest day of her life, although not perhaps the most photogenic, as this was the day that Hope College won the national championship in volleyball in 2014. And many of you probably know my twins flanking Amy on the bottom of this. They are sophomores here. I don't know if they're here, but they're here. And of the 2 professors in my immediate family, I am the second best and the second best known. Many of you probably have had Jill for statistics. Here's a picture of us at one of our favorite activities, going to Bruce Springsteen concerts together. This one was last winter in Pittsburgh about this time, but don't worry, it wasn't a school night. Jill and I have had a life full of blessings. More than most, and trauma and tragedy have largely avoided us. Such was not the case with members of my extended family when I was growing up. I'm an only child, and parents provided for me well, and they did what they could, but the truth is my father's personal struggles created a fair share of marital discord and discontent and distraction and drama, so my childhood was not always peaceful. People are surprised when I tell them this. I have all of the trappings of the perfect little Dutch boy. Both of my parents were raised in church homes. They went to Christian day school. My grandfather was a minister. But the truth is, when I was younger, I rarely went to church with my parents because my parents rarely went to church. And this is why I'm so grateful for what Hope did to me, taking a work in progress and shaping me in so many ways. My grandparents on my father's side were faithful people, but Excuse me. I can't say that they made Christianity seem all that fun. That's probably why their children and their children's children really grew up wanting nothing to do with anything religious, let alone Christian. On my mother's side, there was a lot of pain, starting with the troubled lives of my grandparents, trickling down to my aunts and my cousins. One of my family members, the aunt with whom I'm closest and really my spiritual hero, records much of her pain and the pain of others in my family in a self-published memoir under the pseudonym Annika Lynn Grace. By the way, it's an odd feeling to have the pain and the tumult of your extended family available on Amazon for the low price of $13.95. But this book was a healing in many ways for her, and now she more publicly speaks at churches and counsels people on relationship violence. And for me, the book gave me a glimpse of when I was a child, I really only saw through a glass darkly. What I thought was sort of normal growing up was in fact a lot of deep pain and trauma on a part of a lot of my family. It looks like kind of a cute book. It's not. It tells the story of houses that were definitely not built on the rock. It's a generational cycle, starting with addiction and adultery in one generation, leading to spousal abuse in the next, leading to child abuse in the next. And the story gets even more despairing. After the publishing of the book, Annika, my aunt, not her name, had two children, victims of unspeakable violence, and their lives were troubled and they ended too soon. In 2013, my cousin's life ended alone in his apartment in Grand Rapids. At his side were drug needles that he used to fight and manage the pain through years of psychological and physical trauma. His younger brother, less than a year later, still reeling from his brother's death, ended up in jail for a short time. The first day after he was released, he went to sleep in his own bed for the first time since being out of prison, and he never woke up. Probably the result of a childhood of abuse and an adulthood of hard living. So this is my story. This is my house in which I grew up. Welcome to my home. And when I hear Jesus' parable about building houses, a couple of things come to mind for me. First of all, God's grace is amazing. I have two favorite hymns, How Great Thou Art, which played at my father's funeral in 1981, and Amazing Grace, which played at my mother's funeral in 2010, sung beautifully by my dear friend Dr. Sonia Trent Brown at her funeral. Thank you for that. And I think about how great God is and how amazing His grace is because I have to think to myself, how did I get it so good? How did I get this special grace? My grandparents, aunts, uncles, even my parents had psychological and spiritual battles they often fought. But Jill and I, for the most part, have led privileged lives when others around us seem to have suffered so much. God's grace is indeed amazing, and Jill and I have tried to respond to that grace with gratitude, with good works, and with opening up our home to those who need it. Lesson number one. Lesson number two is, I see this as an action parable. Jesus is giving us instructions about doing. It is not a story about salvation. God's grace is the only path to eternal life through Jesus, and you don't need to do anything, and there's nothing you can do to earn it, period. But what about after that? After that, you have to build a house, and it takes a long time, and it's hard work, and you have to work on it every day, and you have to start young. The years at Hope are some of the most formative house-building years you will have. I loved James Ellis's exhortation last night at the gathering about doing good works in healthy ways. That was spot on, way better than I could have said it. If you weren't here, listen to it on the chapel website. It's exactly how you should live your life. Number three, we live in a broken world. Each of you came here today, and each of you have lived your life through a different path. Some of the things that happened to you are not your fault. Some good things for which you can deserve no credit, and some bad things for which you deserve no blame. And some of us, because of barriers beyond our control, have had harder house-building projects. I think of my cousins. Did they ever really stand a decent chance at a happy and healthy life? Hope College, I believe, is at its best when we are a community that will help you build your house in the broken world in which we all live, and in the particular personal struggles in which you might individually have. Last lesson. We have many houses to build. We're talking about our spiritual house today. After all, it is chapel. But the truth is, when you're here, you have to build your spiritual house, your intellectual house, your emotional house, your relationship house, your vocational house. And they're all important in God's eyes. And you shouldn't neglect any of them, and you should work on all of them regularly. Just like James talked about last night. I recently met with a student. He was happy, he was healthy, he was doing well. He was actually doing pretty well in his classes after he'd kind of found the classes he liked. And things were actually pretty good. But I still challenged that student, are you building all of the houses you need to prepare for today and tomorrow? And I will challenge you with the same thing. How are you building your house? How's your relationship house? How's your intellectual house? How's your spiritual house? Are you spending time in Christian worship? Do you have a devotional life? Are you caring for others? Are you reaching out and getting to know people who don't look, act, or think like you? Why does house building matter? After all, we just said that it didn't matter for salvation. Probably lots of reasons. I'm not a theologian, so I can only think of one. It matters because it prepares us for the brokenness that will inevitably come our way. It prepares us for the day that when we fall short, when our world crashes around us, when we feel like God is nowhere to be found. How did my aunt, Annika in the book author, survived decades of abuse and the death of both of her children, her only two children, in less than a year? Beats me. I don't think I could have done it. The only thing I can come with is she built her house on the rock, and she did it over a period of a long time, years and decades. Now, don't get me wrong. She struggles. She has lots of problems. So do I. And she would be the first to admit that just because she's built her house on a rock doesn't mean she doesn't have pain, because she does. But when you build your house a little bit every day on that firm foundation, you'll be ready, at least more ready, when a parent calls with earth-shattering, life-shattering news. When your neighbor who has dark skin comes over and tells you they've been harassed in the local supermarket with phrases like, go home. When you think that a college or high school friend might be suffering from an addiction and you just don't know how to discern what to do. Don't wait to build your spiritual house until you're older because you're too busy. You're not too busy. Now is the time. A little bit at a time, every day, at this place where there are so many resources at your fingertips. So, leave this place, go build your house, go live your life, and if you're late for class, blame it on the dean. See ya.